This is Down to Brass Tacks.
Good morning, David.
Yes, good morning.
You know, I like to listen to you, you know. Now, as I come now, I speak about something now, you may tell me, oh, man, you're the only one man who already cares to me. But yeah, you are.
No, you talk about things every day.
Wait, that is not what this program is for.
You get a chance to speak every day, whether I'm here or not.
All right. Now, let me deal with you now. Let us say you, not you in person. You know better than that. Now, I was looking at this race issue in the island. David, you believe that since we had black government since the 40s, that we in this country should be talking about racism? Huh?
But you understand why we are still up talking racism today?
I ask you a question, because I'm going into that right now.
Well, I want to hear you. You have the answer to it, so let me hear what you have to say.
Oh, listen. Whenever you have legislators, we put them there as representatives to pass legislation. When the planter class and the mercantile class is ruling this country, they put legislations in Parliament to carry out their business. We exchanged our, what we did is we protest their actions, and we put colored people who said that they would look after our business. Even when we went into independence, we said that we could look after our business better than the colonial law. Now, let me say this to you. You know Adja. You remember Adja went to, which place is Leon, Sion, or which is maybe?
Sierra Leone is what you're talking about?
Yes. Where we saw on our TV, where black people cut off their fellow brother hand, the foot, do some of the most cruel things to their own black people. I just spoke about it. Not a word was mentioned in Barbados. Not a word against black people. And let me say this to you. During the period of time of the planter class, you may not know this, I don't know if you do your research, all of the standpipes and things that were put down by the planter class, because that is the time when we have what we call the Legislative Council, ruled by those leaders. And standpipes were placed because the planters used to pay for those standpipes. You know that today, most of those standpipes was being shut off by that government and put down water tanks. You understand the reverse method? But I would go a little further with you later on, but again, I heard you just now made mention about the amendment to the severance payment. When you spoke about the severance payment, what is the future of the severance payment due to this?
The matter is under discussion. It is not, as far as I'm aware, it is not a fait accompli, it's not a done deal yet, but it is under discussion. And you know what the dilemma is, that many of these companies are not in a position to pay the kind of severance that the law requires of them. So they're talking about a short-term situation. How short-term, I do not know. But they're looking at a short-term situation to ease that pressure so that more companies will not go under, because some of them are definitely faced with that kind of dilemma.
All right. Now, I want you to look back at what I was speaking of. Now, it is easy for a government to sit down, and that is why I tell people that the capitalists don't have to go to Parliament, they have representatives. I can bring two issues to you. One, in case of COVID, where the employer now is asking for a review of the severance payment, because they will have to pay a lot of money with this 13 weeks. Government is hastily going to amend that. So On the other hand, when I spoke to you about a couple of weeks ago, pertaining to a clause that was left out in the ERT, the Employment Rights Tribunal, where the CCJ said a clause was left out that if they wanted the workers to get paid for the time where it would be multiplied by the years they were off, not one word to this day came from the government, neither is the union. But look how quick the capitalist and the employer could have a looking because of the condition you made the workers since I would say, C2SAP, I would like any person to tell me what benefits have the workers received on the C2SAP since they had joined up with the capitalists. I would like them to tell me that. Look how quick they're going to come to rescue the business, but they can't rescue the worker for his own rate.
All right,
I speak like that because you tell me, you just said we must speak out of what happened to you. So
okay.
I'm speaking out now.
Well, thank you very much. This is Down to Brass Tacks. Hello.
Good morning, Mr. Ellis.
Yes.
Hi. I was listening. I'm not going to say it's reputation. That belongs to Raw. but I was listening, and what got me good is when you hit on the banks and the treatment of senior citizens. I was shocked. There's no other word for it. I was shocked this year. Having to been very close to trying to assist a family member with getting some basic things done. And I could not understand why I was hearing they have to go back. So when I decided I would join, the word that comes up is indifference. Doesn't matter how long you were with them, how much money you have. Well, I suspect that that's probably the main thing. But the point is that the treatment shocked me. Given that I am in financial services myself, I know what the standard is supposed to be. So when you are told to go and bring this other document, and this other document was not necessary in just turning people around, especially senior citizens, it hurt me to the core, and it shocked me because I did not expect that level of indifference from any institution in Barbados. And I've been quietly documenting, and as you would say, building our case for the almost cold and callous treatment of senior citizens when it comes to, this is how we're doing things now. If you don't want it emailed to you, you don't have an email address, you don't have a laptop, get somebody to do them for you, but this is where we're going, and you either sink with us, or you're going to swim with us, or you're going to sink. It is this indifferent attitude, regardless of what a person's custom has been over the years. And COVID, of course, has made it worse because now most things have gone to online. Now, I'm not averse to online. What I'm suggesting is that if you have a cadre of senior citizens who have been with you short-term, medium-term, or long-term for many years, you could at least designate some person or persons to rotate and treat to them on a daily basis. Senior citizens are being asked to stand up in lines like everybody else for excessive amounts of time and to be waiting for excessive amounts of time.
But there's more to it than that, though. You are charged for going into the bank.
Oh, I was getting to the estates and how they're handling estate fees and how they are taking money off of persons who are no longer alive, and even though they have received letters of administration, etc., that has not stopped the fees from coming off. You are now expected to go and keep noise to request to have the fees removed that should not have been taken off in the first place. So you're forced to constantly be leaving home or trying to get on the phone and speak to somebody, and even then, the level of indifference is, oh, you're not opening something, you're not depositing anything, why am I bothering with you with this foolishness when the fault really is there?
Yeah. So you will find that tomorrow or Saturday, the boys will go down in Bridgetown and march to remove Nelson's statue.
Mm-hmm.
But under the Dems, this sort of thing was happening. Under the Bs, it happening still. We have no government that is able to stand up and say to the commercial banks that this is unfair, this is unreasonable. They do whatever they feel like in this country. And we sometimes focus on the wrong issues. Listen, Black Lives Matter.
Just another issue.
Black Lives Matter. Black Lives Matter everywhere. All right? But the elderly in this country, and I deal primarily with the elderly, it is not exclusive to the elderly, but they are the ones that we are supposed to protect even more. And we can hear not one voice out of the administration or anywhere from a position of power that can say, listen, you got to stop this.
I sincerely hope that Minister Ford is listening, because she is very much well-loved among...
But this is a finance issue. Minister Ford, at the end of the day, you know full well that this is a finance issue, man.
But that's what I'm getting to, because, Mr. Ellis, you know what the only retort you have is that we have to trade moral suasion because they are private entities.
Well, in the meantime, people are suffering, and yes, suffering in a significant way. People want more... Listen, at the end of the day, those people who have toiled to make Barbados what it is today deserve more than rhetoric. They
Correct.
Deserve some kind of action. And isn't that why we put governments in place?
Yes. In other words, I am calling because I believe that now is the time, if we're about to do a lot of pulling down of structures and systemic issues that have been putting the proverbial knees on our necks for all these years. Don't let's just focus on one thing. Let's deal with all the other structures that are in place, because I assure you, sir, that Black Lives Matter really and truly speaks to these same things we're talking about right now. This is not mutually exclusive.
What role? This is a very critical issue.
What role
are they playing in trying to maintain the status quo and to disadvantage the majority of the people in a country? That discussion needs to take place. Protesting outside in the U.S. Embassy and protesting in Bridgetown, that certainly ignores that aspect of where we are in the country. We are not talking about those things because, as far as I'm concerned, quite frankly, we are into some distractions here. Because
yes,
we don't want to tackle the real issues.
It has to be tackled, though. That's why I'm supporting you, because I know that this the character of a country is. Well, I think Dennis said it best the other day about democracy, but I think it speaks to character. If your character says that you're going to discard your seniors and don't care about the downtrodden or the ones that can't help themselves, then we have issues.
Somebody said that it does not matter what you say. What matters is what you have in your pocket, how much money you have. People in societies do not respond to you on the basis of your name alone. As long as you have money and power in that regard, that is all they are interested in. You know, and that is our reality. We need to come to terms with this particular matter that is affecting so many people, from the level of the way that they are treated when they go to deal with their money, right through to the fees that are being levied upon them and the extent to which it becomes attractive to buy bonds up 5% in Barbados, government bonds, notwithstanding all the concerns that people have had about what happened with government paper recently, because if you put your money on the commercial banks, they're taking it off. And we are powerless in this country to deal with this. We just got to, you know, take it, like it or lump it. And every day you hear about something else that they are doing that caused people to go and sit down and grumble. Let's get real. Let's deal with some of the real structural issues that are impacting on our ability to move forward. That is one. This is Down to Brass Tacks. Hello.
Good afternoon.
Good morning. It isn't afternoon yet. It's 11:23.
Yeah, this is Edwin O'Neill, the president of C2SAP. I have been forced to call your program because of the reckless statements by someone who passes himself off as a historian. Let me at the outset, I hope you'll give me a little license, to allow me to say that a mere recitation of facts does not qualify one as a historian. The recitation of facts have got to be contextualized and follow a certain sequence and development. So when one keeps noise and boasts and recites these facts, I accept that in this society, when that is done often enough, an uncritical audience.
Mr. O'Neill, I would prefer that. Mr. O'Neill, I would prefer you to deal with the real issue that you called to address rather than being so general.
Well, like I said, I'm ready to speak to the role of C2SAP, but I thought
the role of C2SAP. This is not about the role of C2SAP. He basically alleged that, as far as he's concerned, C2SAP hasn't done anything for the workers.
No. And therefore, I feel that I cannot speak to the role of C2SAP, having exposed the mischief that persons of that ilk are likely to foment. Now, the most recent incarnation of the BOSS program gives lie to the statement that C2SAP has done nothing. Because at the level of the Prime Minister, at the level of the special advisor, they all testified that the emergence of BOSS is as a result of representation made by the unions on the forced savings plan. And therefore, and that now there is an element or characteristic of voluntarism that may not necessarily have existed at the outset of the forced savings plan that was announced.
Can I ask you a question?
I go further, sir. I have stated repeatedly that the society and the labor market is not now what it was in the heydays of the Frank Walker and Bradley Adams. And so labor is now forced into a position, non-traditional, some will say unconventional, of negotiating the best possible deal for the workers. Now, and just let me give crude and rudimentary examples. Businesses are ready to lay off 5,000. At the insistence and the intervention and the negotiation of unions, then you see that as a real possibility. You can't resort to old-time things of vegan strike if you lay off. You negotiate. There's a back and forth, so that instead of 5,000, it's 4,500 that keep, instead of laying off or getting rid of 5,000, you're able to keep 4,500 going.
Mr. O'Neill.
They're not necessarily like it.
Mr. O'Neill.
Sir.
Context is everything. We agree on that.
Good.
You're president of C2SAB.
Right.
Do you sit on any government boards?
By virtue of the representation of C2SAB, yes.
You represent C2SAB on how many government boards do you sit on?
Well, two.
You sit on two?
Yeah.
And in both instances, you're representing C2SAB?
Yeah.
Okay. Now, When you look at this situation, let's talk about boss. Let's talk about boss. One of the elements of the boss program that people have complained about is an aspect of it that they believe is mandatory, which is that after a certain point, the government automatically puts your money in salary and in bonds. And then you must come after that and determine that you want to opt out. Now, how do you, as part of C2SAB and the president of C2SAB, how do you see that aspect of it? Don't you accept that that is mandatory?
I think that question is better directed at Dr. Greenwich. Last week, I co-chaired two full days of meetings dealing with the BOSS program. And at every juncture, throughout the day, at each meeting, what was underlined and re-emphasized is that there was a technique employed by government to create fiscal states. But at every juncture, the optional nature of the program was underlined, restated, stated, and re-emphasized. So the reality is that every worker, and I think that Dr. Greenwich used the term in the extreme and unlikely event, that every worker was opted not to be a participant, that is going to be accommodated.
But as president of C2SAB, as president of C2SAB, Mr. O'Neill, no, I cut you off because you are taking very long to just recite what he said.
I speak more slowly than you.
You know, the point is that you are president of C2SAB. What has been presented to the public of Barbados is that opting out comes after the fact. The fact is that when you are put into it, you have no choice. You don't get a chance. You don't have a chance to say yea or nay before the fact, and therefore that is presented as being mandatory.
That is not true. That is a fundamental misunderstanding. That is not the option. I am not government spokesperson on that matter, but I can say that as a trade union rep, we were absolutely adamant on that point. That given the realities and efficiencies of the bureaucracy, every worker is entitled to say, I do not wish.
At which point?
Pardon?
At what point? That was the issue. At what point?
Hold on. You asked me a question, let me answer. If payday is on the 25th, when pay sheets are made up in advance of that, obviously, it is impractical for the worker to say on the 24th, I don't want to participate. But we made the point. The point was stretched out. The point was hammered. The point was restated again and again.
Look,
and
before we go on, hold on a minute. Just before we go on, I am getting reports here of a loud explosion near the airport. More than one person, there was a huge explosion in the vicinity of Paragon Base, Old Chancery Lane area, 2 minutes ago. They've sent us a picture here, a white mushroom smoke cloud followed by black smoke is being seen. They are also talking about smaller subsidiary explosions after that first one, which shook the ground. And this video that they've sent me has been taken from Chancery Lane. So quite a number of messages have just come in here to that effect, and certainly we will need to get behind what is going on. If you're in that area and you're close enough, you can get a telephone message to us. Let us know what you are actually seeing. So we are particularly interested in this development so that we can get to the bottom of what is happening in that area, in the Paragon area, of course. Yes, you were saying,
Mr. O'Neill. I don't know what more the trade union and CITUSAP in particular can do. When we argued and we discussed and we negotiated and we kept on the front burner, that the worker must have that option. And government conceded and government acquiesced. There is no worker whose money will be deducted who does not wish to participate in the BOSS program. And that has been at the insistence of the trade union movement. So I don't know where your historian got his facts from. And like I said, if you repeat an inaccuracy often enough, then people are going to believe it. And that is all that led me to intervene on your program, because it does not collide with the reality of what actually took place.
Well, my only point...
Like I said, I'm not government spokesman, but by the completion of the sessions at the gymnasium, everyone was or ought to have been absolutely clear that our participation in the BOSS program is predicated on underlining the optional part. And just let me repeat. You not only have the option of not participating in the program, but if you choose not to participate, but at some time down the road over the next 18 months, you choose to participate, that is also an option that you can exercise. So I think the person really is nothing more than mischievous. And has got his arrows aimed in the wrong direction when he singles out CITUSAP as not having represented workers. I thank you, and I'm much obliged for the time and the opportunity you've afforded
to put this. I see here a public officer on signing the form referred to in Section 14 may indicate whether he wishes the bonds for 18 months or for a shorter period. A public officer referred to in Subsection 1 who wishes to vary the period stated in the form referred to in that subsection may, at least 14 days, but no more than 28 days prior to the date on which his emolument is due to be paid in any month, advise the Accountant General through his head of department that he wishes to receive his full bond allocation in cash or a stated portion of the bond allocation in cash for that month or for the shorter period. Notwithstanding Subsection 1, a public officer who is paid at a period other than monthly shall advise the Accountant General through his head of department at least 14 days, but no more than 28 days prior to the date on which his emolument is due to be paid, that he wishes to receive his full bond allocation in cash or a stated portion of the bond allocation. This is down to brass tacks. I think we have a breaking story here. Wendy Burke is coming to tell us a little bit more about these explosions. Good morning, Wendy.
Yes, good morning to you, David, and good morning to our listeners. We understand that there has been an explosion at Paragon, 2 people injured. The bunker housing some fireworks has exploded. They're trying now to get it under some control. The fire chief just reported to us he's on his way there. The crews from the airport would be heading there as well. But what I do understand is that it is a tenuous type of situation because water cannot be used to get this fire out. It has to be foam, which brings it under control. And the nearby bunkers also have explosives and ammunition stored. So the area is presently being cleared.
So they mentioned that this is a storage for fireworks?
Yes, remember that in order for fireworks to be released publicly, you have to get the permission of the army, and the soldiers usually transport them to the site. You have your fireworks housed in a bunker there. I'm not sure about payment, stuff like that, but they have to be under their control. So not sure how it would have started, but the fireworks are exploding. We would have spoken to some people close to the area just now, and in the background, you can actually hear the fireworks going off Yeah, so the area is not safe right now. If you're within that Paragon area, you should not try to go to see what it looks like. You should stay clear, because those who are within the area, the vicinity, are being cleared out because there's other explosives in and around that particular bunker, David.
All right. Thank you very much, Wendy Burke, for updating us on that emerging story up there at Paragon. This is Down to Brass Tacks. Hello.
Good afternoon to you.
Yes, good afternoon.
How are you?
I'm okay. And you?
I want to discuss with you, but normally I've got to watch the clock as well. First, let me extend congratulations to the Entertainers of Barbados and the NCF for the production of that video in relation to COVID-19. I think it was well done, and I'm very pleased with what I've seen. Now, Ms. Ellis, I heard you talk about CBC. Now, I'm in no position to respond as far as CBC is concerned. I am responding from an area of knowledge of being read and retaining the things that I have read as far as this is concerned. You are well aware of the Broadcast Act of 1963. You're also well aware that over the years we've seen subsequent oppositions going after government with the object that they will make changes to CBC. And this is a norm. Your life and my life will be confronted with this all along. Now, if you read the Broadcast Act of 1963, you will see clearly that CBC is a child of the mother or the father, because the GIS is responsible for the Broadcast Act. And in so responsible for the Broadcast Act, they make the decisions as far as what should be and what should not be. I don't know if you're well aware that the journalists at the GIS, most of them are assigned to the various ministers in government. None of them are assigned to the opposition spokespersons. I think you're well aware of this. I know for sure that you're only listening to me. But we will continue to have this position until we understand exactly where it starts and where it ends. And I say that to say this, that until the whole act makes a change for the independence of CBC, then obvious CBC would have to be carried along the lines that you have spoken about this morning, because they are child to mother or father. And anybody can pick up the broadcaster and see that it is GIS, not CBC. GIS makes the decision as far as CBC is concerned. Vice versa, I read where the opposition leader spokesman on culture have made suggestions for the changing of NCF. Again, I think they should read the NCF Act of 1977. Which would relate, and you would remember that in 1977, when it was formed, culture fell under the ambit of education, and sports was attached. Now, what is happening here is that I've seen NCF fall back in line over the last couple of years in terms of producing what they're supposed to produce it, and getting in a different approach of becoming promoters, challenging other promoters for things that they're doing. So NCF was now falling back into stride of NIFCA, falling back into stride of overseeing the crop over. And the true sense about it is that the role of the NCF is now being portrayed as set out in 1977. It's not a money-making, should not be a money-making organization. So my feeling on this exercise, sir, is that as far as the statement made by the spokesman for the ministry, for the opposition, that there can be a change, but they believe that culture and sports should fall back under education because of where it could go. And inside of that, there is a board of the Sports Council. There's several other boards in between there that can control the leadership in terms of the three entities in together: education, culture, and sports. Broadcast
When you become prime minister, you could do all of that. You know,
no,
that's a prime ministerial decision, man.
No,
all this thing.
Listen, don't come to me, Mr. Elizabeth. If I become prime minister, you'll be my personal aide and advisor.
You know, you think that that's a one-way street? You must even put a gun to my head.
No. The fact of the matter is that when you get to age of retirement, you always look forward to your retirement years. And I believe that this will be one of the areas that you will be considering having just to sit down there and draw a few dollars.
All right, sir. Thank you very much. Down to brass tacks. Hello? Quite a number of people say that the explosion at Paragon, or the set of explosions at Paragon, really shook their properties and really scared them. So, but at least you know what it is about all like now. And that's the most important part of it, that you have a sense of what has gone on, and you know whether the degree to which the authorities have been responding to it. Down to brass tacks. Hello,
Mr. Elizabeth, sir.
Yes, sir. How are you?
Oh, I am blessed. I trust that the week and weekend will be a good one for you as well, in the station and the entire country as well. I wish the best for us all. You know, Mr. Elizabeth, just now when you were speaking to the head of the C2 staff, I think that's what the gentleman said he is.
Yeah.
I'm not satisfied at all with what he said to you. Because if he could be convinced by a government officer that people had a choice, then really, his thinking is really off by far. Honestly. Because then, I heard yesterday an ad, even on your radio, and I believe it's a government ad, which clearly state that every month the worker will receive their shares every month. Their salary is going to be reduced. I mean, I don't know what he would say or think that they would have a choice. How could you have a choice and yet you're told that if you are not in it, the central bank will take your shares? How would the central bank take your shares if they weren't attached to you? He really has to think through what he is saying, you know? I really did not accept it. Now, anyhow, I have three observations I would like to make, if I can. The first one is, when the Prime Minister spoke last night, I heard nothing mentioned about the church being given the clear or the opportunity to assemble again. Yet the minibus and them have the opportunity to wear their mask, but two can sit in the seat and half the amount can stand. Well, the half the amount that is supposed to be standing, half of them could stand. How, I thought to myself, would they be given the opportunity to do that and sitting close to each other, and yet not one word mentioned about giving the church the opportunity. If the country is in order for business, does not God's business count in that? Is that not important? The church that is ministering and praying for the spiritual well-being of the nation, and you would not see that as vital?
I really don't think that. Let's go back to the last instructions that were given in relation to the church. I think that everything revolves around the issue of physical distancing.
Yeah.
So I don't know that. I don't know how much more are you going to recommend. That basically the people should be able to go back into the church and be very close to each other? Is that what you want?
Miss Ellis, think of what she promised and what you just said. And that is, if two persons are going to sit in a minibus seat, good God.
What are you recommending?
I am recommending that
people should be able to sit close to each other in church because the government allows people to sit in the minibuses?
Mr. Ellis, the government said wear masks. You heard that, didn't you?
Yeah.
That's what they said. Wear your mask. So then why not the church also to wear masks and go into the house of the Lord?
No, I don't know that the government stops people from going into the house of the Lord.
Ms. Ellis, listen, remember this. It was told 40 square feet at first. You know, small churches, 40 square feet is a... I mean, how many persons could go in there? I can understand that then. And even then, there were very few that were going into them because they don't have that kind of space. But now, if you say you're opening up for a business and you're going to get two persons sitting in a seat in a minibus. Now, do you know there? You know how close that is.
But seriously, though, I just caution against this thing about... So the government says... And because the government says we are going to lose all sense of perspective on what we ought to do.
But
you know that if I get in a minibus, I would be very reluctant to be sitting so close to somebody. I mean, and I would assume that until you have a greater degree of comfort about COVID, that you would be very, very uncomfortable about taking certain steps that are closer to the norm. Now, the most important issue here is that whether you are in the minibus or in the church or wherever, that you have to look after your own safety. That to me is the most important issue. And therefore, I think that if you're going to church, you are going to go into church and you are going to observe the physical distancing. You're going to be concerned with the protocols because there are countries around us that have had a resurgence of COVID. I mean, I don't know that because you have the ability to sit down or you've been given permission to sit close to somebody in your house or in a bar or someplace else, that you are supposed, you need to advocate that you need to be close to each other. In many instances, the protocols are saying, don't hug, don't shake hands, and stuff like that. Don't get so close to each other. Wear masks. So do the thing that protects you best. That's my judgment. Don't debrass that.